When you have insurance, it's easy to forget about your out-of-pocket costs. That can be a lot of money. How do you know you're not overpaying? HealthLock can help. HealthLock is a technology company that securely connects with your insurance and reviews your claims for overbilling, wrong codes, and even fraud. To date, HealthLock has saved its members over $130 million. To save, visit healthlock.com. Do it today before you see another healthcare provider.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Hi, I'm Molly Jongfast, and this is Fast Politics, where we discuss the top political headlines with some of today's best minds. And Governor Gretchen Whitmer has proposed a tax credit for caregivers. We have a star-studded show today. Congressman Andy Kim tells us about his Senate run and the bizarre New Jersey ballot structure that allows party insiders to have enormous advantages. Then we'll talk to CNN anchor and my personal bestie, Jim Acosta, about the media failures covering the 2024 election. But first, we have former Vermont governor and presidential candidate Howard Dean. Welcome back to Fast Politics, Howard Dean.
Thanks for having me. This is always a delight.
Oh, I'm so excited. So I can't take another conversation about polls. Make us all understand how insane and stupid this whole thing is.
I don't think I can. I try not to pay too much attention to the polls because one of the problems is that the media engages in clickbait, and that's about it. And that's always been the case. I mean, I can remember finding that out when I ran for president myself. It's all clickbait. It's not news. It's a problem because the so-called low-information voters are basically all cranked up. This is the only thing good Trump is good at. I mean, basically, the Republicans are running on a platform that can be summed up in two words, rage and hate. And it's successful with people who don't think about the issues. It's amazing what the public doesn't know. Part of it is because the press doesn't focus on what they know, and part of it is because there is no press for a lot of the folks that are getting their news through Fox and places like that.
I think about Biden's Inflation Reduction Act, right? And how a lot of economists, with the exception of Paul Krugman, basically, were like, is this going to be a recession? Even we have a very smart guy called Justin Wolfers on the podcast all the time. Even Justin was like, you know, you don't know. He was bullish, but even he was cautious. And what happened was we didn't have it. And the reason we didn't have it was because of bold legislative infusions to our government, to our manufacturing sectors through the Inflation Reduction Act, which actually reduced inflation.
And furthermore, most of the investments in the Inflation Reduction Act went to the places which are full of people who are Trumpists.
Yeah.
A lot of money went into rural areas, rekindling factories to make chips and cars, electric cars, and all this kind of stuff. I heard a maddening interview from a member of the United Auto Workers the other day who have endorsed Biden for good reason. And they're saying, well, you know, we don't do what our union says. I think that we both voted for Trump the last time and all this stuff. And I thought, you know, it is so frustrating. People are demanding this and demanding that, and then you give it to them and then they turn against you anyway. It's really tough. I think the country is at great risk and they don't see that either. This is not a high education group of people, but still, no, this is a democracy.
It's interesting to me because like so much of Trump's message in 2016 was this economic populism, which I think was one of the reasons he won against Hillary Clinton was he said, I'm going to bring back, you know, jobs. I'm going to bring back coal, which, by the way, coal, besides being just horrendous for the planet, is also wildly expensive. So even if you were like, I hate the planet and we have to like get this coal, even then, it still doesn't make any financial sense. But he had this message of economic populism. Meanwhile, fast forward, Joe Biden delivers economic populism, right? He does these things. He brings chip manufacturing back to the Middle West, which was like, you know, a fantasy, really, of previous presidents. There seems to be a disconnect between what he's done and what he gets credit for.
Right. Here's what I think is really happening, and it's irrelevant, unfortunately, to all the good stuff that Biden has done. This is a group of very angry people. For the first time in my life and maybe in the history of the country, if you're a 50-year-old white guy and you lose your job in rural America, you're not getting another one unless you're a reader at Walmart or something like that. Minority communities are very familiar with this syndrome, but white folks aren't. And they think, well, you know, why are women have all these rights? How come black people have all these rights? How come gay people have all these rights? And so in some ways, what Trump does, what he sells is none of this is your fault. It's all the liberal elite and the college-educated people and the, you know, people who are teaching about African-American history in the universities. It's all their fault, and none of it's your fault. So he really is absolving people of any responsibility to improve their own communities. I'll do it for you. I'll just get rid of these people. And of course, he never does. It's the same playbook that Mussolini and Hitler played.
I was talking to Eddie Glott about this. It's sort of the last rebellion, the backlash of a multiracial democracy, right? We've never had a multiracial democracy. Theoretically, at least there was a sense we might be getting closer to it. And then Trumpism came in and took all of that away. The math on that, like there may be white men in the middle of the country who lose their jobs, but the numbers on unemployment dictate that actually it's a very, very tight labor market. And so they should technically, I mean, again, I don't know, you know, people's personal stories, but they should be able to get another job.
That's not what it's about. It's not about the economy. It's about their economy to a certain extent. But what it's about is the 40-year creep towards a multiracial democracy where women have full rights. I mean, the reason so many Republicans are against abortion and against IVF is it's really not about IVF or Republicans. What it's about is controlling women. Even in their own towns, they've seen women get more rights than they used to have. They've seen gay people allowed to get married before they were just cast out and made fun of for their whole life. It is in the sense, Eddie, who is one of the smartest people I ever met, is right in the sense that it's the loss of white privilege, but it's more than that. It's an absolution. It's a giving up on making progress or redefining what progress is. Progress is not living in a peaceful country where democracy hails. It is resentment towards a lot of the change that's been made. And the other problem is this is all fueled by the billionaire class.
Right.
It's not an accident that billionaires who are lean Republican are founding No Labels because it's a way of making sure that Trump wins. And that's because they benefit from the system. What all of this does is divert attention from the abuses that white working class people are taking at the hands of billionaires because it works to abuse white working class people. They've been doing it for years. And blame it on the usual suspects, women, gay people, people of color, and so forth and so on. That's what Trump is really good at. He's not good at anything else. He's a failed businessman, as Judge Engoron said. He's a crook. He's a narcissist. He was incompetent when he was president, but he's really, really good at this. It does remind me of the story of Adolf Hitler, because Adolf Hitler was an incompetent and a failed artist, and he had this tremendous gift for blaming other people. Unfortunately, it ended up with a Holocaust. And I think there are a fair number of people in the Republican Party who wouldn't think that was so bad. How about the guy who got up at CPAC and said, welcome to the end of democracy? And that is for reasonable political dialogue in the United States of America? I don't think so. So this election really is about the survival of the United States of America as a world power. And if we, you know, people think, oh, it's great not to be a world power. Why should we be? Because we have the level of prosperity we have because the dollar is the currency reference for the world. If it isn't, we don't get away with a $31 trillion deficit. So I think these folks have absolutely no idea what they're doing to their children by voting for somebody like Trump.
It's interesting. You know, you're a doctor and you've done a lot of work laying the groundwork for how we got Obamacare. So I'm curious what you think about the embryonic personhood stuff out of Alabama. It seems like ideologically the Christian right has for a long time wanted to make sure that a five-celled embryo had the same rights as a person insane. But I mean, what do you think about that? And I feel like politically that's very stupid and it's going to bite Republicans.
Yeah, it is going to bite Republicans. And so is the right-wing partisan Supreme Court ad. Is going to bite Republicans, and they realize that, but it's too late for them now. You know, the court is degenerated into nothing but a partisan Republican operation, and that's what it is. So the institutions are already beginning to crumble. There's a lot of work to be done to fix it, but we can't fix it with somebody like Trump in the White House. It'll just get worse.
Yeah, but there have been like some kind of like huge healthcare jumps, like $35 insulin, Medicare expansion. Like we're seeing, you know, quietly, you know, none of this is getting any attention, which happens to actually be good for people like Andy Beshears and different other states where they're trying to do Medicare expansion quietly so that Republicans can't make it a partisan issue. But I mean, these policies are weirdly, like, once they get in place, people love them. Like, people don't want to give up Obamacare.
Well, that's why they don't want to give up Obamacare, and they certainly don't want to give up Social Security and Medicare, which the
Republicans have
finally turned the volume down on cutting. Because they know it's murder for them if you cut them. The stuff about IVF is just right-wing white Christian nationalism, which is incredibly sexist. If you read the scriptures about it, it's basically they underline all the stuff that's about subjugation of women. And that's what these people are doing. And the incredible part about the opinion in Alabama was it was written by a right-wing Christian nationalist. I think he was the justice that wrote the opinion. And he basically said, this is right-wing Christian nationalism and women shouldn't be doing any of these things. I mean, you know, it's pretty extraordinary. That's who's going to be in charge of HHS if Donald Trump wins.
Yeah. And by the way, like, even if you look at that Heritage Foundation 2025 document, you know, they want to make the Department of Health and Human Services the Department of Life.
Yeah. I mean, Heritage used to be a respectable organization. And when that guy, Jim DeMint, took over, it became just another right-wing group of crackpots. They actually had a fairly decent healthcare operation. They were conservative, but they were thoughtful and very, very knowledgeable. When DeMint came in, it just turned into a partisan shipwreck. And that's what it is now.
It's kind of amazing. So, but I do think it's interesting, like, as we look at, so, you know, Republicans, everybody in the House is up. Then you have this Senate map, which is really good for Republicans. But, you know, a lot of the candidates we're seeing, I mean, I think this is really interesting, are these self-funded carpetbaggers coming from other states. And I have to wonder how much of that is because a lot of this money is already sort of allocated to Donald Trump's legal fees.
Carpetbaggers from out of states has been a Republican strategy for a long time, and it mostly doesn't work. Sometimes it does. But mostly it doesn't. So we'll see. I mean, look, the election, I do not think in the end that Donald Trump is going to be the next president of the United States, because I do believe that Americans are going to look at this at the end of the day. Now, we don't know. When Trump beat Hillary, it was mostly because James Comey changed the subject at the last minute from Trump's anti-women stuff to Hillary's supposed emails. And he changed it not because he wanted to influence the election, but because he wanted to save his butt in case the Republican committee that he'd promised to tell everything to got into power. So as Rick Santorum once said, the only smart thing he ever said, which I could tell, he said, as he was asked about this, we were doing a panel in Toronto about the election, and somebody asked about the election, and he said, these are the two most unpopular people that have ever run for president, and whichever one we're talking about last is the one that's going to lose. And that's exactly what happened. I think eventually Biden is going to come to the top. I read an article today, and I can't remember where it was. I think it might have been in Semaphore. Biden really wants to get much more aggressive with Trump, and I think that's the right thing to do. Actually, I've always thought that Biden ought to challenge Trump to a push-up contest, because and kick his butt. And I think if Trump could do a single push-up, I'd be amazed. So, you know, that'd be fun. But absent that, which is unlikely, I think that Biden needs to go after Trump and kick his butt publicly and not be so focused on the demeanor of the presidency, because this is not a time for demeanor. This is a time for brawling. And Biden's not a brawler.
Yeah. I mean, what I think is really interesting about all this reporting that comes out of the White House is, like, he's angry. He dresses people down. He yells at them. Good. Do it. That's fine. I'm OK with that. You know, the stakes are quite high here.
He needs to focus on dressing Trump down, because Trump is a total fraud. I don't want the United States, people of the United States, to find that out after he gets elected.
Yeah, I think that's right. Howard Dean, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. See you later.
AI might be the most important new computer technology ever. It's storming every industry, and literally billions of dollars are being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? It's time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. OCI has 4 to 8 times the bandwidth of other clouds, offers one consistent price instead of variable regional pricing, and of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. So now you can train your AI models at twice the speed and less than half the cost of other clouds. If you want to do more and spend less, like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic, take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/strategic. That's oracle.com/strategic. oracle.com/strategic.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
When you have health insurance, it's easy to think, I'm covered, no worries, right? Well, not so fast. What about your out-of-pocket costs? That can be a lot of money for you and your family. And if you're like me, you can't help but wonder, was I overbilled? You're not alone. It's estimated that over 50% of medical bills contain errors. Unless you're a billing expert, how do you know your medical bills are accurate? That's why I want to tell you about HealthLock. What is HealthLock? It's a healthcare technology company that securely connects with your family's insurance. When your medical claims come in, HealthLock technology reviews the claims for errors like overbilling, wrong codes, and even fraud. HealthLock makes it easy to find and fix hidden errors, so you pay only what you owe. To date, HealthLock has saved its members over $130 million. Bottom line, insurance alone isn't enough. HealthLock finds medical bill errors before you pay. To save, visit healthlock.com. Do it today before you see another healthcare provider.
Nobody wants to outlive their money, but it happens, especially for women. That's why Gainbridge offers the Parity Flex annuity. It's designed for women's unique retirement needs, with flexible withdrawals to help cover unexpected expenses, plus a guaranteed lifetime income benefit that keeps paying you even if your account balance is zero. In other words, it's like getting a paycheck for life. We'll say that again. A paycheck for life. Guaranteed. Sounds too good to be true? It's not. It's the Parity Flex annuity. And it's one more example of their commitment to creating a better financial future for women. One where they feel empowered, not excluded, and ready to take on whatever their next chapter holds. Gainbridge believes financial flexibility and security are things we all could use more of. At retirement income you can't outlive is the ultimate flex. Who's with us? Start saving now at Gainbridge.io. Please visit Gainbridge.io/ParityFlex for current rates, full product disclosures and disclaimers, and other important information.
Did you know Rick Wilson and I are bringing together some friends for a general election kickoff party at City Winery in New York on March 6th? We're going to be chatting right after Super Tuesday about what's going on, and it is going to probably be the one fun night for the next 80 days.
If you're in the New York area, please come by and join us. You can go to City Winery's website and grab a ticket. Andy Kim represents New Jersey's 3rd Congressional District and is a candidate in its upcoming Senate race. Welcome back to Fast Politics, my friend Andy Kim.
Thank you for having me back.
We always want to have you back, especially right now. When we had you the first time, you had just done something super brave. You had become the person to jump into this race, which had a Democrat running for re-election who is facing a plethora of legal challenges. I think that's a very generous way to put it. Talk to me about where you are right now in your primary. You know, I just want to add this disclaimer. We usually don't have people involved in primary fights, but this is, nepotism, something near and dear to my heart and, you know, a really interesting and also troubling situation. So talk to us about it.
Yeah, happy to. I mean, as you said, you know, when you had me on last time around, I had stepped up the run against Bob Menendez. Twice indicted, this time for gold bars. And I told you about how I was doing this to protect our democracy, give the people a choice. The race has taken a turn and it's gotten even more dramatic. Now I am running against the First Lady of New Jersey, the governor's wife, the sitting governor's wife. Never in American history have we had the spouse of a sitting governor run for statewide office, especially having not ever run for office before. In fact, she's running as a Democrat, but she was a lifelong Republican until about 9 years ago. It's a lot to process, but the fundamental reason for why I'm doing this remains the same, which is that we have to protect our democracy. That means that we have to give the people of New Jersey a choice. But right now, what we're seeing is, you know, that I live in the last remaining machine politics state in the country, and party elites are all in for the governor's wife. Surprise, surprise.
Let's talk about that, because what I've read about it is kind of, I was actually really shocked when I read what's happening right now. So you have this primary that's coming up when?
It's on June 4th.
The thing that I think our listeners should know, which is something that always really upsets me, is that, you know, I live in a blue city in a blue state, but there are things that incumbents do to protect themselves that don't benefit anyone. They don't benefit the right. They don't benefit the left. They only benefit incumbency. What is happening here is even more insidious than that. So discuss.
Yeah, right now, in New Jersey, we're seeing this in its worst form. I live, as I said, in the last machine politics state in the country, and its most pronounced way for the machine to control our democracy is to really, you know, manipulate the ballot. So 49 other states use a type of ballot called office block, which is the traditional thing. You know, you have, you know, the position you're running for, Senate, and then the names of the candidates below. In New Jersey, the system allows party elites to give preferential placement on the ballot for their handpicked candidate, which in this case is the First Lady of New Jersey, the governor's wife. And, you know, all this being said, you know, the governor just the other day announced his, you know, budget for the year, and mayors and county leaders and others are negotiating with the governor about what money they're going to be able to get, you know, for their efforts. So, I mean, it's just a lot mixed in here, deep conflicts of interest. But as a result, what happens is that the First Lady of New Jersey announced her candidacy and immediately got multiple party leads to back her. Many of these people never returned my phone calls, never gave me even a chance to be able to make my case. And the expectation is that she would be coronated as the next senator from New Jersey. You know, I even had party leaders come to me and tell me I should drop out and let her be able to do this. And I could not do that. I could not do that. I have a 6-year-old and an 8-year-old. I don't think I could look my kids in the eye if I felt like I was just stepping aside for someone who I truly believe that I am more capable and qualified of doing the job of United States Senate. I'm a 3-term member of Congress. I've been a public servant my entire career. I'm a Democrat that won a district Trump won twice. You know, I've shown that I can win tough races. So it's been a frustrating situation.
Before you were a politician, you were a nonpartisan government official, right?
Yeah, I worked in diplomacy and national security, was at the, you know, National Security Council at the White House under President Obama. But you're right, I was a career public servant. So, you know, I've served this nation. I understand the challenges that we're facing. But right now, the challenge that I'm facing is from my own party, which is crazy because I've spent the last, 5+ years in Congress, knife fighting and fighting with Republicans you know, dealing, you know, being there at the Capitol compound on January 6th and standing with President Biden to try to stop the Republicans from damaging our democracy. But unfortunately, I'm here in New Jersey now, having to fight against my own party now, who I think, you know, party leaders are doing things that I just full on consider to be undemocratic. You know, I believe in a democracy of fairness and equality, that any citizen has the ability to participate, not just the well-off, not just the well-connected. And I'm just not being given a fair shot here. When I am given something closer to a fair shot, like, you know, we have some of these counties have these conventions, I've been blowing it out of the water. I've been winning these conventions by double digits. The problem, though, is that half of the counties in New Jersey don't even have conventions, and they just allow one or two people to be able to handpick and give that preferential placement on the ballot to the first lady. And that's what I find to be so frustrating.
You're still going to be on the ballot. You're just not going to, she's going to be above you.
Yeah, like I'll be on the ballot, but the way our ballots are designed, it's that I can be off to the side. You know, it'd be harder for people
really?
To see. Yeah, so basically the ballot is designed in like a column. So instead of it being by office, there'll be a one column that'll have, you know, Joe Biden, Tammy Murphy, and all these other endorsed candidates. I'll be in some column over to the right, you know, and I won't have Joe Biden above me on the, you know, on the column. So obviously, you know, when you're a voter and you go up to the vote, you know, you see Joe Biden's name, you know, yeah, you'll see Joe Biden's name. And you haven't been particularly paying attention to all these different races. You may just tick down that column, which is what the party leaders want. They want voters to not be informed. They want voters to not really understand that there's a choice before them. That's why I say it's manipulated.
It is insanity.
Yeah, it's been proven to give certain candidates upwards of double digits advantage. And, you know, and that's frustrating for me. I mean, look, right now, like I'm actually double digits up in the polls.
Right. But if they can't find you, they can't vote for you.
Yeah, exactly. And then so, you know, that kind of lead that I have in the polls could potentially get negated simply because of ballot design manipulation that my own party leaders and the Democratic Party are leading the charge on. So, you know, that's why, you know, I've been pushing on this. And in fact, I just filed a lawsuit in New Jersey. It was not something that I took that very seriously, you know, make that decision. But this has to end now. You know, it's just such a broken system. All I'm asking for is a fair shot. I'm not asking for any advantage myself. I'm just being asked to be placed in a position where I can have some fairness here. And 49 other states do this. New Jersey's the only one that does this differently. You know, that should say something, right?
Yeah. Well, I think what's so interesting about this problem is that you have a Republican Party that is doing this kind of thing on the regular. This is one of the very few cases where you have a Democratic Party doing this, but you are running for a seat of someone who is in serious legal trouble for corruption, right? Like, so if there ever were a time to be above board about everything, this is it.
And I think that that's why the people of New Jersey are not standing for this. There's been a big backlash. And I think that the party elites and the machine weren't prepared for this backlash. But it's because of exactly what you said, just, you know, that on the heels of this indictment of the senator regarding gold bars and wads of cash, it's the same system that protected the senator that is now trying to install and coronate the first lady to be the next senator. So it's the same thing, you know, the same few handful of people. And I think that that's what's bothering so many people is just saying like, look, we can't have the same old politics. Like something has to change. And in fact, if the Democratic Party does not change, I worry about our ability to be able to hold this Senate seat this November. I can tell you, independent voters in New Jersey are furious right now. They had concerns about the Democratic Party after this indictment of the senator. And now they're watching the Democratic Party, you know, just blatantly trying to push the first lady into a Senate position without a fair contest. You know, that's going to really hurt our standing with independents. And that's going to hurt our ability to hold the seat. And with a razor thin majority in the Senate, and a tough election cycle, the last thing the Democratic Party needs is a potentially vulnerable seat in the Senate here in New Jersey.
You know, what's interesting to me about this is one of the things I think Democrats have done really well, and not even Democrats. One of the things that I think Biden world has done well is they picked up, he's managed to pick up all the never Trump Republicans. And, you know, he's done it by saying, you know, you may not like some of the social spending. You may not like my larger, you know, I mean, if you look at the manufacturing stuff, though, the point is he's been able to really appeal to those voters. There are a lot of those voters in New Jersey. Talk to me about what your state sort of looks like and what your voter base looks like.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, look, in New Jersey, the plurality of voters are unaffiliated voters, independent voters. So, you know, that's really what you have to engage. These are people that are unaffiliated for a reason. And I know this because, you know, I'm a Democrat that won a district Trump won twice. What I've come to learn in my experience of winning three tough races is that, you know, my district's often called this like battleground district, and it makes it sound like it's like a blue army versus a red army duking it out every day. But what I learned is that in my district, and frankly, across New Jersey, a lot of people are frankly suspicious and frustrated with both parties. That's why we have to show that we can restore trust and integrity to our politics. That's what I am running on. Because here in New Jersey, 84% of people surveyed in New Jersey believe that their politicians are corrupt. 84%. And look, I mean, this is a state where the majority of politicians are Democrats. So that shows what people feel about Democrats right now here. So if we don't show that we're changing and don't show that we're trying to restore trust and integrity, the independent voters are not going to stand for it. I mean, we saw with, you know, Governor Murphy only won re-election by, you know, a handful of points. I think it was 3 points re-election a couple of years ago. Now, this is something where, you know, you cannot take things for granted. And I feel like the Democratic Party elites are playing with fire.
Yeah, no, I agree. Say you win this primary. How are you different than Tammy Murphy?
Well, a couple of different reasons. First of all, I have experience of working in Congress, of actually working there at the Capitol. You know, I can be somebody that is ready day one. You know, I don't need any on-the-job training. I'm ready for this. And right now, the world is on fire. There's so many crises and conflicts. I'm the only career diplomat in Congress right now in the House or the Senate. I can be somebody that can step in and try to use that experience. I haven't been on the ground working in war zones and working at the White House and the State Department to try to help. I can be somebody that, you know, already understands, you know, how to be able to navigate the legislative process, you know, and that's allowed me to, you know, push forward on key issues. You know, for instance, understanding why we need filibuster reform to be able to get the things that we need passed in the Senate. Whereas, you know, the First Lady of New Jersey, she's called the filibuster a useful tool. I completely disagree. And so, you know, those are some differences on that front. But look, on the other angle too, I think that there's a hunger right now in my state and throughout this country for a new generation of leadership to step up. And I will be the fourth youngest senator in the nation. I would be the first Asian American ever elected to the U.S. Senate from the entire East Coast of America. And, you know, I think that, you know, I think people are excited about, you know, having younger voices be able to come up and certainly for the Democratic Party to build out their bench and be able to have more diverse, younger leaders that are there showing what the future of the party is. And the fact that, you know, again, I've been a Democrat that can win a district Trump won twice. Like, I have a lot to offer to the party about how we try to build out a wider and stronger coalition that can help us build a durable majority going forward. And so, you know, those are the things that, you know, I hope voters see in me as someone who can try to, you know, fight those fights and make the party stronger and help fix and heal our democracy at such a critical point in our nation's history.
As we're looking down this election, tell me what you can do now to get your name on the ballot. Is there a process here?
Well, right now, a couple efforts, which is, first of all, like, I will be on the ballot on June 4th. And what I need to do is make sure that we are raising the resources and building the kind of campaign that we need to be able to get my name out there, to have people understand that there's a choice. You know, the last thing I want are people showing up on June 4th at the primary and be unaware that there's a competitive Senate race. You know, I need people to be able to walk in there knowing that there's a Senate race, hopefully knowing my name and knowing something about me. So, you know, that's what I'm pushing on. And if people want to help out, you know, they can go to andykim.com. And beyond that, you know, right now we are building up a grassroots army right now. This is going to be the largest grassroots mobilization for any primary, statewide primary in our state's history. We're building up something incredible. And, you know, we need people that are willing to knock doors or make text calls and other things like that that are helpful to get the word out. Right now, you know, those are the types of things that we're pushing on. And I do believe that if we can pull that all together and raise the resources and run the campaign that we need to, that we can win this. We can overcome what obstacles the machine politics are throwing in my way. And I think people recognize this is a potentially historic election for our state to finally be able to have a real democracy here that is going to be based on fairness, going to allow people to be able to vote the way they want. The one thing, you know, one thing I've learned as I've gone around the state is people in New Jersey don't want to be told who to vote. They despise that. And I think right now we're seeing that come to a head. You know, I'm hopeful that people will stand up for their own voice in our democracy.
Thank you so much, Andy Kim. I really appreciate you.
No, thank you for letting me talk about this race. It's certainly an extremely dramatic and crazy race, but it's one that I think really gets to this question. And, you know, I was there with Joe Biden when he gave a speech about January 6th earlier this year. And he said, we know who Donald Trump is, but who are we? And I think that that question, who are we? And who is the Democratic Party? Who are we as Democrats? Like, that is important. And I think that this race, both in terms of it being about, you know, Senator Menendez and his indictments and allegations of corruption, and then now this issue, as you raised, about the First Lady and nepotism and about machine politics. The question is, who are we as Democrats? I hope that we show that better than what we're seeing right now in New Jersey. I believe that, and that's why I'm running. But I really do think this kind of gets at the heart of this question of, like, what is the soul of the Democratic Party? Who are we? What do we stand for? And that's why I think it's been a race that has captivated a lot of people, not just in New Jersey, but across this country. And I hope people see the importance of us standing up and showing who we are, because I think it'll have major implications for our abilities to be able to win elections going forward.
Thank you, Andy Kim.
Thank you so much.
Jim Acosta is the host of CNN Newsroom with Jim Acosta, airing weekdays at 10 a.m. EST at CNN. Welcome to Fast Politics. How weird is this? I'm hosting you. Welcome, Jim Acosta.
Wow, this is cool. This is like news inception or something.
That's right. We're through the mirror, through the looking glass.
Thank you for having me.
I'm so excited to have you because, first of all, I love to go on your show. I can't go on your show at this moment.
Yeah, someday soon. I haven't given up hope.
But I'm very excited about your move to every day. So talk to us about your new time slot.
Yeah, so now it's Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. Eastern, 7 a.m. on the West Coast. I'm happy about, so if you're waking up on the West Coast, you can tune in. And you can change your viewing habits. It's great. I mean, you know, the weekend thing was, and you know, you were on about that much. But, you know, we're able to do all these interviews. We could give them time. You know, we did breaking news, a lot of politics. And this is going to be a little bit different. I have 1 hour now, so I have to really, you know, compress. And the segments aren't quite as long, but we're going to try to keep it conversational. Like, we're going to try to take the good stuff from the weekend and bring it on to the morning show during the weekend. Hope people tune in.
Yeah. I was hoping you could talk about, like, there's something very cool about being able to do the news every day, though.
Absolutely. For example, I mean, this week, we've been doing the primary stuff and the results from that. This morning, we had the situation in Gaza. I mean, there was just breaking news happening during our program. And Biden went out on the South Lawn on his way to the border, and he made a comment about it. So we're jumping around in sort of news whack-a-mole. We're moving from one news story to the next, and it's going to be fast-moving. But at the same time, you know, emphasis on my part, I'm really trying to preserve those conversations, those interviews, where we can kind of get beyond the headlines a little bit. As you and I have talked about so many times, don't talk about the horse race, talk about the stakes, don't just talk about the polls, talk about the choices, and like try to get people something a little meaty as they're getting these headlines. I'm hoping we're doing it.
You know, we're back to this crazy news cycle of just like endless news.
Oh, yeah.
That it does make it very hard to cover it. But let's talk for a minute about like stakes versus odds, because that is something you and I are both like really passionate about, this idea that the way you cover news is as important as what you cover, right?
I mean, absolutely. One of the things, and you and I have talked about this a gazillion times, is that we have this extremely important election. I know it's a cliche for everybody to say this is the most important election of our lifetime, but I think this time we can really say it and mean it. I come from the experience of having covered the White House during the Trump years. We saw how that administration ended. I actually flew on Air Force One with Donald Trump when he went down to West Palm Beach and was done with being the president of the United States. I mean, I was with him on that final day. And one of the things that I said to my colleagues is that, okay, Trump may be gone, but Trumpism stays. It remains. It's not going anywhere. And I think that's what we are now seeing play out at this very moment. Not only is Trump back, but Trumpism is back on steroids, and it's filtered down into our politics to just about every level. And it's something that we're going to all have to contend with in the months to come. I mean, disinformation, democracy. I mean, these are all the issues we're going to be talking about from here until November.
Like, I think back to those salad days of January 2021. Do you think we were all too naive? The fact that so many of us thought that, including people like Mitch McConnell, thought that Trumpism would resolve itself.
I think so. And honestly, I mean, I've looked at this a gazillion different ways. I did this when I covered the White House. Some of this is a coping mechanism that a lot of people have, which is, okay, you know, one of these days it's all going to catch up with Donald Trump and he's just going to leave the scene. Guess what? That did not happen. That has not happened. Folks might have thought up until yesterday or the middle of this week, oh, well, the Supreme Court, this will all end at the Supreme Court. Okay, well, maybe it won't. It may be on everybody to go out there and vote and participate in this democracy. And I think, Molly, you have said it best when you've come on the show. This is the election about whether we're going to have elections. And I think all of this is extremely important stuff. I do think, to some extent, folks wanted to look the other way. They wanted to stick their head in the sand and just to kind of ignore it and hope some of this extremism in our politics would go away. And guess what? It didn't. And so we're going to have to deal with it.
Yeah, no question. And I do think, like, this idea that Trumpism would somehow resolve itself and that we would go back to normal has been really interesting. This week, we saw the Supreme Court decide to look at the insane presidential immunity. It was so crazy that even people with low expectations for the Supreme Court were shocked that they took it up. It does go back to this question of, like, will our institute, you know, the people who have been bragging about our institutions holding, have they really?
Well, and I, you know, was talking to a guest on my show this morning, Doug High, and he was saying, you know, the Supreme Court is becoming like every other institution, the media, the NFL, what have you, in American society. That just is not what it used to be. It's not as popular as it used to be. You know, and we didn't really have as much time as I wanted to kind of delve into that, but it's an interesting comment to make. The Supreme Court should be above all of that. Like, it should be the one branch of government. It should be the one institution in American society that should be above reproach. And it is damaged right now. The image and the institution is damaged. And it is just a fact of life. A lot of this started with Dobbs. And when you saw those justices, when they were nominees up on Capitol Hill saying, oh, Roe is precedent, precedent should be respected, and so on. And then that obviously was not like 100% of what was going on in the back of their minds, because as soon as they had the chance to throw out Roe versus Wade, they did. And so as institution, it is damaged, and it is something that we're going to have to deal with. I think in terms of the immunity issue, thank goodness, if I can say one thing about the Supreme Court, that they are allowing audio out of these proceedings when they do have the oral arguments about this immunity issue. It's going to be fascinating, because I want to know, why is it we're even hearing this? I mean, it seems to be pretty straightforward if you look at USA versus Nixon.
Right. Yeah. No, the Nixon case is insane. I mean, it's just completely wild.
Yeah, it was pointed out to me that William Rehnquist recused himself in that case, and Clarence Thomas is not recusing himself in any of these proceedings. And so, I mean, I do think it's not unreasonable for folks to have questions about how the Supreme Court is conducting itself. And it's certainly playing everything that we're seeing right now. There's no question about it.
Yeah, and just, it's sort of shocking, right?
Really?
So I'm curious now, as you're sort of in this brave new world, what I think is pretty interesting about Trumpism is that there was so much sort of norm shifting, but a lot of those norms haven't necessarily come back.
No, I know. It's so true. And, you know, when I was covering him at the White House, you know, there was this constant conversation about, are we being too tough? Are we drifting into something else besides meat and potatoes straight down the middle of journalism? And honestly, I look back at the way we covered it and I look at the way we cover him now. And I, as I've said in the past, and I'll say it again, a different kind of president calls for a different kind of playbook. And if he is to behave in these sorts of ways that, I mean, it's saying that it's unprecedented, it's kind of like, you know, whistling past the graveyard. Like, I mean, it's beyond that. And so it has to be covered as such. I mean, if he's going to not tell the truth, we have to call that out. If he is going to talk about being a dictator on day one, we have to call that out. I mean, and so, you know, one of the things that I tell folks a lot who ask, you know, well, maybe you were doing too much there, maybe it was a little over top over there. My question is like, okay, what do you want us to do? We have to cover the news. And a former president who represents somewhat of a threat to democracy, and I'm being diplomatic when I say that, that's the news.
Right.
You got to call it the way you see it. And that's what I've done in the past. And that's what I'll continue to do. And that's what a lot of my colleagues do. And I think it's the right way to go.
I think back to like what George Conway told me a while ago. He was like, Trump is going to destroy everything, the Republican Party, all of it. And, you know, he was, I think, a little wistful because he, you know, he helped build that Republican Party. And it's going to all have to be destroyed. And the thing, like with the Mitch McConnell stuff, it's like you really do see that, in fact, there is no place for anything that isn't MAGA in this party, despite the fact that it started as a populist notion, but it's largely morphed into something that most people don't really want.
Yeah. And Molly, it's amazing that you bring up George Conway, because I think George is the perfect example of somebody who is in that world, in Trump's world, I think almost went to the Trump administration and had been in Republican politics for a long time. I mean, you and I both know, like, how many former Trump administration officials have I had on my show? Stephanie Grisham, Mark Esper, the list goes on and on, who have been on CNN and in general, on all the networks, talking to 60 Minutes and so on, who talk about Trump as a danger to democracy, who talk about Trump as not being fit to serve as president of the United States. And, you know, if all of those folks are saying something, of course, that's the news. We have to cover it. It is what it is. I do think what you're saying about, is the Republican Party going to go by the wayside? Maybe.
I mean, you have to have two parties. I mean, you should probably have more, but at least two.
Exactly. And maybe that's the case. But I think in 2020, and I think we might see it again here in 2022, look at that Nikki Haley number. The other night with Michigan, there was all this talk of uncommitted and this protest vote against Joe Biden. There were more people who voted for Nikki Haley than Donald Trump in the Michigan primary. That was lower than we had seen in some of the other early primary states. And I have to think that some of those folks are the kind of Republicans who are going to say, you know what, we're going to either sit this one out and wait until 2028, or we're going to go and vote for Biden at the top of the ticket and vote for Republicans on the other parts of the ticket. And I think that that is quite possible. And so I'm not one of those folks who's sort of down in the dumps and thinks it's all going to go down the tubes. I just don't see that happening just yet, because I think that people underestimate how deeply unpopular the former president is. How were these swing districts outside of Philadelphia and Detroit and Phoenix and Atlanta, are they just going to have an out-of-body experience and all of a sudden say, okay, now I'm okay with voting for Donald Trump after they sort of put that one to rest? I just don't. So I really think this is a jump ball heading into November, and possibly even advantage Biden at this point, despite what polls say.
It's really interesting when you think about this party's problem, because there has been like an enormous realignment that we don't talk about so much, which is that the more educated you are, the more likely you are to vote for Democrats. You know, if you look at the numbers, some college, grad school, postgrad. And it does seem to cut completely along those lines, which that was not always the case. In fact, until very recently, Mitt Romney was a candidate because Mitt Romney was an archetype, right, of a conservative voter. I mean, that shift has to be meaningful.
Absolutely. And I think I covered the Mitt Romney campaign. I was with him on election night when he lost to Barack Obama. And he was very much sort of the last bastion of the establishment of the Republican Party. And who knows, maybe Trump will be such a disaster politically for the Republican Party that they will go to a Mitt Romney type the next time around. I mean, I do think that there is an appetite for that. I do think, to Biden's credit, I mean, on the Democratic side, he is not like a movement figure, Joe Biden, but as an establishment figure of the Democratic Party, he's managed to hang on to the party quite well. Look at the way these early primary states have worked out for him. Dean Phillips, what is he pulling? I mean, it's just nothing. It's not like a Bernie Sanders situation. It is not like a Hillary Clinton versus Barack Obama situation.
No, it's not.
It's just not.
It's not at all. In fact, one of my kids came in when we were watching results the other day, and he's like, "Who the fuck is Dean Phillips?" And I was like, "You read the newspaper every day and you don't know who he is? Wow."
Well, when the New York Times has a story about how you have a coffee, you get the coffee truck in New Hampshire, and they write a story saying that nobody showed up. That is typically not a good sign.
That is not a good sign. But it is like one of the things that this White House complains about, and I actually think they're probably right, is that this is their complaint, but I think they feel that the mainstream media does not like them. And is it worth talking about? I know, I hate to, you know, speak out of school, but, you know, you do see the tweets. Talk to me about, like, you would think that the sane White House would be more liked by the mainstream media than the insane White House.
Yeah, I mean, I covered Obama's second term, and, you know, they would get mad at us back then. I could tell you stories about that. I do think, to some extent, it's sort of the conversations you and I had, Molly, on my old weekend show. There's Earth One and Earth Two. Biden having problems with the border is sort of an Earth One problem. When I covered Obama in the second term, and the Obamacare website did work for a couple of weeks, that was sort of an Earth One problem. People storming the Capitol on January 6th is very much an Earth 2 kind of thing with Donald Trump. And, you know, to some extent, I do think that some of the complaints from Democrats on the progressive side are warranted when they look at the both sidesism that goes on in the media and whatnot. And I do think you do have to have some sense of perspective. But at the same time, I mean, somebody once said politics ain't beanbag. And I think if you're the White House, you have to expect there's going to be a critical coverage when it comes to the border. There's going to be critical coverage when it comes to Gaza. I do think the president has a really tough problem when it comes to Israel, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, and how Biden negotiates. He is one of these grand negotiators in the old school way. And he negotiates with Bibi Netanyahu out of this mess. I mean, I had James Carville on the other day, and he made a very good point saying that Joe Biden does not want this problem flaring up at the Democratic convention.
Certainly not. Especially, we're back in Chicago again.
And back in Chicago, and of places, exactly. So, I mean, I do think, yes, that there are times when it's sort of like the Obama tan suit phenomenon rears its ugly head. I don't know. And yes, they do yell when the pool sprays and the president's sort of like, okay, who do I take a question from? That is a proud Washington tradition, but I played a part in it myself. So I have to plead guilty to some extent to that. The other thing I don't get, Molly, is, okay, Biden comes out, he goes out and gets on the helicopter, and you cannot hear the questions. You can only hear the president. The video and audio quality is terrible. And Trump used to do it when he was president. I wish if I could just put out, if I could put one suggestion in the suggestion box, that we just don't do those anymore. Those are just the hairiest TV situations. I do think the president would be well served in having more news conferences. I think he does well in those settings. We're not here to do them any favors or tell them how to do things or whatever. I just think, you know, Obama handled them pretty well. He didn't like to do them very much. And I think Biden is kind of in the same boat. I think that would help him. But I don't know. I'm not here to, you know, give any pointers here. But I think more of those would maybe serve him well and maybe take some of the heat that they are feeling over there away.
Jim Acosta, I hope you'll come back.
Of course, as always, that was so fast, but it was great to catch up with you.
And now your moment of fuckery.
Jesse Cannon.
Molly Jung Fast. You know, it's not often friends of the show get great news, but Congressman Rumi Gallego got some great news. What are you seeing here?
Kyrsten Sinema raised no money and is now dropping out. I want to take a moment here to extend a hearty, I don't want to curse because this is the kinder, gentler Jung, a hearty, you are not a good person to both Kyrsten Sinema and and also Joe Manchin, because had those two just been a little bit better people and not so interested in getting money from lobbyists, we would have a lot more progressive legislation. We would have a permanent child tax credit. We would have things that you can't even dream of, free pre-K at the national level. You know, we could have a lot of stuff had those two not decided they were fiscal conservatives. And also, by the way, I am happy to see them both go. So Democrats will lose the seat in West Virginia, but looks like our friend of the show and great, funny, brilliant Congressman Ruben Gallego will clean the floor with Governor Kari Lake. That's it for this episode of Fast Politics. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday to hear the best minds in politics make sense of all this chaos. If you enjoyed what you've heard, please send it to a friend and keep the conversation going. And again, thanks for listening.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive, with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
See new things, try new things, go back centuries while living in the moment, forge new paths while discovering old ones, pedal, paddle, and paint while trekking, tasting, and tailoring experiences that transform you into a better version of yourself. Immerse yourself in the world by activating your mind, your heart, and your body on a river cruise exclusively from Avalon Waterways. Save with limited time offers at avalonwaterways.com. Avalon is cruising. Elevated.